It's Ricky Warrick, Fighting Heart on the Dwyer and Michael Show. The artist that you just heard is sitting right across from us right here, right now. Hey, man, good to see you.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me back. Thank you for coming in.
Good to be here. How you been?
I've been all right, thank you. Been pretty good. Obviously, what we've all been through. Just happy to be out the other side. What are you talking about? Something happened.
Yeah. When did you get back out on the road?
I got back out in March. Almost 2.5 years since I last played a show. I started March this year in the UK with my solo band.
And
that was still a little weird. People were still a little bit, I'm not, it was the UK. I'm not sure if we want to go and stand in a crowded club.
Well, that was everywhere, I think. Yeah. And people didn't know. And you listened to the experts.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting to find out the experts, they're just as dumb as we are.
And then I went back in May, and it was totally different. It was a different vibe. People were now getting more confident.
People were sick and tired of looking at each other across the table.
It was great to be playing. The first show was in Cambridge in England, and it was pretty emotional, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
To get back on stage for the first time in over 2 years.
Were you nervous? Relieved. Relieved, okay. All right. Because it's like almost needing like permission, you know what I'm saying, to go out, not just for you, but for people. It's cool.
Yeah, it's definitely strange, but just to get out there and then just see everybody at a show and, you know, be back with, I mean, I took a picture. We stopped at one of the service stations, they've got Muslim in the UK, and I was just sitting there with my band and the crew guys, and I was just like, man, I've missed this so much.
Well, that's what you do, right?
You know, it was just great to be back with my buddies and just getting back and even just getting back in the tour bus and everything like that and people farting and the whole thing. I was like,
those are the ones I remember.
That's right. So you were able, did you guys record during the pandemic at all? I know that Black Star has a record coming out.
We did. We recorded the new Black Star Riders album last year. Actually, a year ago this month.
And
we were starting to come out the tail end of the pandemic when we recorded it.
And I've been following you on Twitter, and what are some of the other ones that I can't remember? But so I've seen that you're doing a lot of playing in your living room. You're doing a lot of online, staying connected with the audience. Is that something that... did it take a while to get used to?
Yeah, something I was a skeptic. I was like, like a lot of people were, but the online thing, I thought, how's this work? It's not going to be the same. What's the quality going to be like? And then you're put in a situation where you're kind of going, okay, I can't tour anymore. How am I going to generate some income? And so I started looking into doing the online show. And the first one that we did was just, we flipped open the computer and just sat there and played into the camera, the whole thing. It was very raw and very basic. But people seemed to dig it. And then as it went on, my wife, bless her, she got really into it. She's like, well, we need to buy some lights and we need to buy this mixing console and we need to get these GoPro cameras. And we invest all that. So when we do it now, it's like, it's the quality's really good. And I'll be honest with you, the reaction was amazing. When we were in total lockdown, the audiences I was getting were brilliant. And it's something now that I'm going to keep doing, even though we can get it back out and play.
I think it's a great idea because you stay in touch with your audience in a completely different way that wasn't even available or considered 5 years ago.
Exactly.
I saw one of your first performances,
right.
And it was cool, but there were technical issues, and you're like. But at the same time, I'm like, this has got to be what it's like when you're first starting out and you're going out. I mean, you got the amp that maybe your graduation money from high school bought you.
Right.
It's not near what you want to have, but it's the best that you have.
Yeah.
And Damon came in and he said, he asked us, he's like, how should we do it?
Yeah.
And we're like, I don't know how we should do it. And so all of you guys are sort of now creating these great moments so intimate with your audience, even though your world's apart. So I think it's really cool.
No, and we're, like you said, we're educating ourselves as we go along. Each show we're learning to do, something different, you know, the first couple of shows, I'm like, you know, I realized, well, the Wi-Fi connection is not so good. And then I realized my daughter was on Netflix upstairs. He's like, get off the Wi-Fi. We're doing a live show here. You know what I mean?
Daddy's trying to put food on the table. You know?
That's so everybody funny. Off the Wi-Fi now except me.
That's so funny you say that, because when we went to a radio convention, people were doing this from their homes. It's like, yeah, I could tell when my partner's kids started gaming because he's...
Yeah.
So it's not everybody. It's a relatable thing. And like you said, fortunately, it's behind us. I think we learned, hey, it's great, a great way to stay connected, but it's not a substitute for the real thing.
And it never will be.
No.
And you know, like I said, I'm going to continue doing it, but, you know, it's gone from, obviously, the height of lockdown. I was doing maybe once every 6 weeks. I'll do a couple a year now. But people ask for it. People have come up to me at the show and said, you know, that live streaming stuff you did, it was great, really kept us going when we were all locked down.
And that's the other thing we were all locked down.
Yeah.
So you were reaching out and probably doing a way bigger service to people than you even realized.
No, it was insane. I mean, in a weird way, I was saying to somebody the other day, the first year we were sort of all locked down and we were home, I was kind of okay, because I was suddenly going, I'm here for the birthdays, I'm here for the anniversaries, I'm here for all the stuff that I was never here for. I've got this live streaming thing going on, which is doing great. Yeah. This is all right. This is okay. I'm kind of going to join this. Now, the second year,
you're a little sick of all the birthdays.
I was like, you know, I can see my wife looking at me. It's about time you went back on the road. You know what I mean?
Happy birthday! Today's your special day. Happy birthday! Should let me get out of my face. Hey,
yeah.
So it's not cool.
Ricky Warwick is in the studio. He is back out on the road. He's doing a solo acoustic tonight at Rascals. It's their customer appreciation. So I don't know why you're doing it, not getting paid, but I think that is so.
What? Wait.
Hey, Ken, right on the flyers, free show.
But you played last night, did an acoustic show last night. And then hustled your ass here, which we appreciate.
No, of course.
How has your acoustic shows, since doing the live streams now, has that changed your audience response or your expectation of how they respond to you?
Well, last night was the first one.
Okay.
First solo acoustic show I've done in 3 years was last night. And I'll be honest, you know, the first five or six songs, I was like, all right, this is kind of weird. And how, you know, and then suddenly you just go, boom, you're back in the zone. And it was great. And we had a great night last night. We played Irish Bar Minahan's in Genoa. Yeah.
Yep.
And it was just a great night. And it was just so much fun to be back out playing and just seeing everybody. I think the expectations haven't changed a lot. I think people are maybe a little more appreciative.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly I found that with the Fighting Hearts gigs I've done in the UK. I've done 3 tours this year over there now, and people are just happy to be going to shows, and that really comes across.
Well, it certainly was a reminder of all of the things you take for granted.
Yeah,
it's like your dad grounding you, but it was like a 2.5 year timeout.
Right. I know. Yeah, exactly what it was like.
And you couldn't be nice and get out of it. Yeah. So that was it.
Yeah.
All right, Ricky Warwick is in the studio with us. Somebody said there's something wrong with that dude's mic. He sounds funny. Nope. He's not from here. He's from Chicago or New York.
No, I think it's New York.
Ireland.
They've got me on the Irish mic.
Yeah, right. The Irish.
I couldn't even switch. The Scottish want to be talking more like that, what I mean? You know what I'm saying, man? This is a Scottish mic, but I ain't go back to the Irish mic and just talk like this, so whatever.
But don't
actually,
you live in LA
you put
now?
Me on the English mic, mate. It's all right, I'm on. This is the English mic. How's it going? All right, guys.
Well, you live in LA, so now go on the LA mic.
Let's not do that. Yeah, there's a limit.
There's a limit. Okay.
You might recognize Ricky from Black Star Riders, Thin Lizzy, and more. He's doing an acoustic show. We'll take a break, and then we're going to throw a question at you that we ask everybody, and it because it relates to all of us. And I'll explain in just a minute. You don't need to answer right away, but I'll explain it to you when we come back. All right, you going to hang for a little bit?
Absolutely.
Will you play for us?
I'd love to.
Okay, cool. So stick around, Ricky Warwick. More with him in just a moment. 8:23. It's Friday with Dwyer and Michaels.
Ricky Warwick is on the Irish mic.
to be sure.
He's
I know our cliches.
He's doing an acoustic set at Rascals. It's a free show, but how many drink minimum is it?
Eight drink minimum. Wow. Wow.
Yeah. I said to Dwyer, I'm like, man, when I have people over like for my Super Bowl party, I do it's a free deal also, but they got to bring food. They got to, you know, bring a dish to pass and eight drinks. That's the deal.
Wow.
Okay. During the break, Dwyer was talking to Ricky about which song?
There's a song that he's got that I really like called Time.
Don't Seem to Matter.
Don't Seem to Matter. And it's I can't even think about it and you singing it because I get choked up. It's such a beautiful song.
Thank you.
That you and your daughter sing. And I was wondering if it was a product of the pandemic, but it wasn't necessarily. You had already connected with those feelings before any of that. And yeah. I think it's a great song. It's about being away from your kids and missing the things you don't even realize you're missing at first.
Ricky, don't let some dopey DJ put words in your mouth. What's the song about?
He actually explained it far better than I can. That's exactly what it's about. You know, it's just it's the being away. It's also about missing, you know, I guess people that are no longer with us. I mean, I lost both my parents in the last 4 years, and there's that part of it as well. And just realizing what they mean to us and them not being around. And, you know, it was one of those songs that I think when something's that clear, I mean, I wrote it in like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I wrote it I was back in Ireland. I remember writing it, and I got home and I sort of was playing the demo to Keith Nelson, who I was working with on the album. And he went, "This is great." He says, and the funny thing is, that's the demo. I went in. I had a cold that day, and my voice kind of cracks a little bit if you listen.
Yeah, I could tell it didn't sound that great.
Yeah, no, it's rubbish.
Yeah, it sounded, you know, and it felt like you hurried.
Thank God for auto tune. So, you know, we just kind of played it, and Keith recorded it, and I said, obviously, when we come to do the album for real, we'll redo it. So, you know, we're doing the album for real, and we're redoing this song,
and it ain't happening.
And Keith's still going, "We're using the demo," and we used the demo, and then I brought my daughter in, and she did the BVs on it.
Now, so, and I'm just, you know, I'm just listening to stuff, and I don't know when I first heard it, but I'm just sitting in my, you know, I'm typing my stupid stuff for the show, and the song just plays, and I had no idea.
Right.
So I had no idea your daughter's on it.
Right.
I'm just hearing the song, and I'm like, wow, kind of a change, you know, real slow, real soft for you, and then real heartfelt, and then your daughter sings, and the tears just fall right out.
Yeah.
Beautiful song.
Thank
it's
so
very
much.
Cool.
So how did you do that? How were you... Were you able to watch her singing?
Yeah.
Is it a moment of pride or
Totally. I mean, I went home and I said, "I've written this song about you, kiddo, so you better sing on it." And she's like, "All right." And she's like, "All right, Dad." And we were joking off air there. She said, "You know, is there Starbucks afterwards?" And I was like, "Yeah, well, I'll take you to Starbucks."
Those are touching moments, aren't they?
And she was so nonplussed about the whole thing, where I'm sort of sitting there watching her sing it and choking up and
going through
the whole thing. Yeah. And like I said, she did it, like, I think she did it in two takes. I'm like, "You're done." She goes, "Great, we can go get coffee now." You know, and I was like, "Okay." You know,
it's almost like it doesn't even matter to her.
Yeah.
But what she's singing is like soul crushingly beautiful to you.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's. I don't know.
Thank you.
I absolutely love the song.
Thank you. Me too. I'm very proud of it, and I'm very proud of her for the great job she did on it as well.
Ricky Warwick in the studio with us. That song is on.
It's on the last solo record, When Life Was Hard and Fast, which came out a year ago.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Keith produced the entire.
Keith Nelson from Buck Cherry produced the entire thing and co-wrote some of the tunes with me on it, and we played all the guitars and stuff on it. And I'm already working with Keith. We just started last week, actually, on the follow-up.
Okay, that's interesting because you mentioned Buck Cherry.
They were one of the first concerts back when we came back from pandemic.
Right.
And we had Josh Todd on with us. They played a show in Quincy, where we broadcast now, too.
So that leads, this all ties into the question, because we asked him this exact same question that I want to ask you. And it occurred to the two of us, as everybody in the throes of this pandemic, you know, we're going to look back on this time and realize, geez, this was a gift, and we pissed it away. If you know, you don't want to be at a dinner party and go, "So what'd you do during lockdown?" "Oh, I painted the dining room," and, "Oh, that's cool. I learned 18 new languages."
Right.
So during, away from what your day job is, what new skill did you pick up, if any, during that time block? And when I tell you, if you need time, we'll take a break and think about it. Josh Todd knew right off the top of his head, and I'm like, no freaking way.
Oh, it surprised the living nightmare out of us.
No freaking way. He's like, I wanted to do this. I went and learned it. So I practiced, and then I got hired, and I did this thing. I picked up a... So the question would be this, and we ask this of a lot of people. What new thing did you pick up during this block of time, whether it's out of desire, sheer boredom,
necessity,
what new skill did you pick up during that time?
Man,
if you need a minute to think about it, we can take a break.
I think that, you know, I think I got better at playing guitar.
Okay.
I think I really jumped into, you know, learning scales and stuff that I never really bothered with before. I was like, right, it's time to sort of...
Because when you're writing and touring...
Move on up, you know, a little bit with this.
Yeah, you're focused on touring and playing for tours and playing for writing. Yeah. And you're not sitting down and really looking at what you're doing.
I just threw myself in the studio every day. And I've always had the idea, Nick Cave, I read a great thing years ago. Like, he treats it like a job. He gets up in the morning, puts his suit on, has his coffee, walks down into the studio and does a day's work. And I just thought that is brilliant because he treats it like I'm going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that just resonated with me years ago. And I have the same attitude. So when the lockdown came, I just was, you know, spending even more time in the studio because I'm not doing, you know, I'm not doing school runs. I'm not doing stuff like that. So there's no interruptions. So I did that. And that was really productive. I tried to brush up my German. My eldest daughter is half German. And she speaks impeccable English. She lives in Berlin. So I thought, okay, it's time for your old man to sort of try and brush up on his German skills.
Oh, language is hard for old guys.
I got on the old Duolingo and started trying to brush up on the German thing. And of course, you know, she came over to stay, and she was back over in August, staying with me, and I sort of was trying to, she's like, Dad, she goes, Dad, my English is great. Why are you even bothering learning German? And I was like, oh, man. I was trying to surprise
you. I wanted to go see the Scorpions with you together, and we could learn. Yeah.
Don't learn. It's too late for you.
Yeah.
And by the way.
Basically, she's going, you're too old, Dad. Just give it up, man.
And we wanted to talk to you about the car keys and the driving situation. So here's what Josh Todd told us, and without missing a beat, he became a phlebotomist. He's always wanted to know how to draw blood. He's fascinated by epidemics and pandemics, and he wanted to help out. So he went and took the training, and he learned to draw blood.
Wow.
And volunteered.
At a tent in L.A.
That's amazing. Good for him.
But imagine, some old lady, I'm here for the...
Josh has got more tattoos than anybody coming, you know, right?
And you know he's shirtless.
Shirtless.
He absolutely is no shirt on.
I find that funny at all.
He's finding that vein when he's taking off his t-shirt.
I bet you've got experience doing this, mister.
Well, listen, I mean, isn't that amazing? Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know?
I completely. And what were some of the other, you guys remember what some of the other answers that we got from people? Like, someone wanted, they became a home brewer or something like that. And these are different musicians and stuff.
Yeah.
Goose, do you remember any of the other ones? But Josh Todd just jumps right to the top of my head because it's so
opposite
of what I would expect.
That's amazing.
To do, you know?
Wow.
So
when you talk about treating it as a job, treating it as a work day, there's other musicians who I just read about recently who also have that same kind of philosophy about making music. I just read that Brian May went in and recorded tracks for the Guns N' Roses what would become Chinese Democracy, ended up not getting used.
Have you heard this story yet?
No.
Brian May and Axl Rose somehow met up, probably at a benefit concert for somebody.
Yeah.
And Axel's like, "Yeah, I'm recording this record. I'd love for you to come play some tracks on it."
Yeah.
You got Brian May shows up. First time he shows up, Axl doesn't show.
What a surprise.
But Brian May, because he's Brian May, he starts playing.
Of course.
And he lays down the tracks, and the engineer thinks it's really good. The engineer calls up the hill where Axl is. He's up the hill from the recording studio. It's not like he's across town or even like in another country. He's up the hill.
Yeah.
And so they play it for him over the phone. He's like, oh, my God, that's incredible. That's incredible. Let's just cut it one more time. So they hang up the phone. Axl doesn't even show up. Brian May plays the whole thing again. Axl shows up at the end of it, and they talk, and they really love it, and there's a really good vibe. They're feeling it and everything. But Brian May is a professional musician who gets hired to come in and play some solos and some, and then Axl is like, well, you know, Chinese Democracy took 13 years to make or whatever. They ended up not even using it.
Any of his ideas.
Any of his stuff.
So he's like Santa and Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Well, it needs work.
Yeah, right.
How crazy is that, you know, I'm just writing some songs with Brian May, but I'm not going to use them.
Right. It's Brian May. Hey,
the list of guitar players that have worked and quit working with Axl Rose is
you know,
just...
You're the only one that's not on it, man. You're the only one who hasn't.
You know, I mean, I can't say anything bad about Axl because, you know, we've toured with him when we were in Lizzie. And,
yep.
I've actually, you know, Axl was pretty instrumental in my old band, The Almighty, getting a foothold in America, yep. because our demos somehow found their way to him way back in 89. Him and Ricky Rackman and Del James, who's Axl's personal tour manager and has been for years. And they loved it, and they brought us over, and we played the Cat House. We were the first European band to ever play the Cat House, and that was thanks to Axl. And he's been nothing but great to me when I've been in his company, and so, you know, I see that side of him, yep. so I can't diss
so,
the guy, you know?
So how does he get this?
Well, I mean, it was funny. I'll be honest with you. When we were out with Lizzie, we were opening them, we'd be sitting in our dressing room, and the stage time would come around, and we'd start walking to the stage most nights, and we'd get halfway there, and somebody go, no, turn back to the dressing room. Axel's nowhere near the building yet. you're going on an hour later. Or then somebody would come in and went, can you guys do like an hour and 20 minutes tonight? You know?
Hour and 20?
So, you know, it was like, okay, you know, whatever. So I don't know what was going on. That was back in 2011. I mean, obviously he's got his stuff together yeah. now, and they're playing great in his own time.
And I don't think he ever didn't have his stuff together. Like this book I just read,
yeah.
it didn't make any judgments at all. It's just, yeah. look, everybody who's an artist is an artist in their own way. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're Axl Rose or Scott Weiland. Everybody's dealing with whatever they're dealing with, and it either helps your performance yeah. or it hurts it, and yeah. you got to ride the line in between it
well,
all
you
the
know,
time.
I felt bad for the fans. I mean, we played in London, and he obviously, you know, they went on really late, and a lot of people missed their trains and had to leave early and missed half the set because of that, and that's not cool. But I mean, to me as a person and hanging out with him. Yeah. Nothing but a good guy and nothing but encouragement and helpful. And so I can't really say any more than that because I don't know what the workings are. But I know he doesn't live by the clock. I know he's very
no,
much like,
that's exactly
he goes
right.
to bed when he's tired and he gets up. And if it's 2 o'clock in the morning, he's wide awake. He gets up and.
And that's exactly you know. Why when you started talking about,
yeah.
you know, is it Nick Cave you said?
Or yes.
Who like treats it like a job because yeah. if you want a certain amount of production, you have to put a certain amount of effort in.
Yeah.
And Axl is just way more like, I'm going to do it when I feel it.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating to guys sure. who are in a band setting who are all in the studio. I just yeah. read Matt Sorum's yeah. book. Yeah. Same thing. They're all playing. Axel's nowhere to be found. Yeah. He comes in. He's like, hey, I just found the artwork for the album. And they're like, what? We yeah. just laid 13 tracks
but
down.
The difference is that works on the creative side. Over here, you're on the performance side, man. And yep. we're missing our trains.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. well, the last time they played here one time and they did, remember, you went to that
yeah.
show. They did 4 songs. He's like, I'm not feeling it.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm yeah. no good here.
You see, I can't get on board with
that's
that.
That's disrespectful.
I mean, yeah, it is. I agree. And I can't get on board
and,
with that.
And
you know?
I used to buy into the, well, he's a creative person. But yeah. man.
You can't treat yeah. your fans like that.
The yeah. paint, the brushes, the canvas are here. Sit down and paint. Yeah. That's it.
No, I'm with you. I mean, I'm talking from a personal level.
Just right. I understand.
But about, you know, that other stuff, I'm with you 100%.
So the Almighty opened those shows in England. Or in where was it that you guys played? Because Slash just said we played our encore to a stadium or an arena that had 1/3 capacity. He's like, everybody
no, that was Thin Lizzy. We went out with him. Thin
okay,
Lizzy.
Which,
this
okay,
is 2011,
right.
and this is before Slash and Duff came back. So it was still Tommy Stinson on
okay,
bass.
Yep.
And,
yeah.
Well, it's I appreciate you sharing that with, and holding the line, and we weren't trying to get you to talk crap about
sure.
it because. It's nice to hear that he is a good
yeah.
dude to a lot of people
yeah.
because you have this impression that he's
yeah.
just unapproachable and untouchable.
Yeah.
What's the most odd or unique or typical thing about Axl that people would be surprised? You know what? He always puts ketchup on the side of his French fry. You know, something like that.
I mean, I just think he's just like, I mean, I've always found him like a regular guy. I remember, you know, on that tour, just sitting backstage one night with him, just having a few Jaegers
yeah.
and just talking about life. And I cracked him up because I think I had a beer in one hand and a Jaeger in the other. And I was like, hey, look, Axl, Irish handcuffs. and he just thought that was the funniest thing, you know. And as he's walking out the door,
yeah.
he just turns around to me and goes, Irish handcuffs, you know.
Yeah.
I just take people as I find them. I don't really, I don't have any prejudged conceptions of what he was going to be like. Like I said, he's just always been good to me. Do I agree with the way he treats his fans? Would I roll like that? No, never.
Yeah.
But, you know, as one-on-one as a person, he's been nothing but a sweetheart.
Well, and think of all the different, I mean, the bands you've played in, the bands you've played with, the
yeah.
bands you've supported, the bands who've supported you.
Yeah.
It's a wide variety of a lot of different types of cats.
Sure.
And you it doesn't matter where you came from or what you're doing. You got a 3.5 hour window that you got, you know, 20,000 to 30,000 people who are waiting to rock. Yeah. So you got to throw all that away. It just doesn't matter. Get out there and do what you came to
it's
do.
It's all about the people. That's what it's about. They are, you know, if they're not there, then there is no music to play because nobody's buying or coming to the shows. So you got to make them feel like they are the most important thing because they are.
When it's true. When the new Black Star album comes out in January,
yeah,
which I can't wait.
Thank you.
I got a new turntable and I'm getting it on vinyl and everything. Right I'm doing on, everything man. On vinyl now. I'm no longer too. A digital listener,
me
but
too.
And I know Scott's going to play some shows with the band in England.
Yeah. Scott
Gorham.
Okay.
So what do you got to do to convince him when the tour comes over here to come along? And I mean, he's getting up there, right? I mean,
yeah, he's you know, Scott's turning 72 next year, and Scott's like, oh, you know, guys, I'm think I'm taking a bit of a backseat here, you know, and you know, and then the pandemic hit, and I said, I get it, you know, you don't have to prove anything, Scott. You've seen and done it all.
Well, sure.
We'll miss you, and you're Scott Gorham. And he said, you guys keep going. Don't stop on my account. I went, okay, that's cool. Thank you. And of course, we're in the studio, and like every other day, he's like, oh, is it sounding in there? What are you doing? Are you missing me? And I went, yeah, of course we'll miss you. We love you, man. You know,
time to break out the ages.
And I remember saying to our manager, I said, he's not going to retire, Scott. You know, and of course, when we decided we do something to mark the 10th anniversary of the band, and I said, let's give Scott a call and see if he wants to come back and play some songs. So the idea was he was just going to get up and play a few songs.
Yeah.
So I send him the list of songs, and I'm going, you're not going to, oh, yeah, I'll play on that. So he's pretty much doing the whole set
awesome.
At this point, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he realized that he wanted to, we did a 7-week tour right pre-pandemic for Another State of Grace, our last album, and then the world stopped. But we got that 7-week tour, and I know it was rough for him. It was rough for all of us. It was a long tour. And I think he just was like, I'm kind of done doing these 7-week tours a Europe on a bus. And he's earned that right. But I think when the pandemic hit, he realized how much Scott, he's such a team player, and the camaraderie and the storytelling, he lives for that. I think he missed his buddies and the whole vibe.
I think no matter what you do, I think you're going to miss that.
So I think, I wouldn't rule anything out. I mean, we're talking about doing some Lizzie stuff next year, which I'm really excited about as well.
Time to hit him with the age.
He's not done.
Time to hit him with the, you know, age is just a number spiel.
Yeah,
that usually pushes
man.
Him.
You know, he's Scott Gorham. I said, you're Scott Gorham, what are you going to do, man? You know, you can't play golf. Maybe you can't play golf.
Yeah, right. He can.
Yeah.
All right. Ricky Warwick is in the studio with us. We'll take a quick break and come back. 8:47. Squire and Michaels. Ricky Warwick is in the studio with us. Listen to this. We just got this message. Hey, you guys. This is absolutely one of the best interviews you guys have ever done. And I think just that
thanks, Mom.
The little signed Ricky's mom.
Yeah. Yeah. All the way from Ireland.
Yeah. Oh, we're huge in Ireland.
Yes.
Yeah. So, but it's fun talking
that's
about
sweet.
Because everything you're talking about is relatable to people. What are you talking about working with your daughter, talking about, you know, the boredom of being at home. It's great. And then it wasn't. And you know, at the end of the day, we all deal with the same issues. Do you want to hear this? I could bring Ricky's tuning his guitar.
Oh, he doesn't even have headphones on.
I don't need headphones.
Oh, you don't? He doesn't need headphones. Wow.
Because you're in
headphones
Davenport.
Headphones are for wusses.
Is it because you're in Davenport, Iowa? Is that why you're not getting
Wait a minute. Every single one of the rest of us have headphones on. What the hell, man?
I hear my own voices inside my head enough all the time.
We can harmonize with them.
Just to compound that, you know?
So tonight at Rascals, are you playing just your solo stuff? Or
no, not at all. Okay. I mean, it's everything. It's Black Star Riders, some Lizzie songs, Thin Lizzy songs, some songs from the old band The Almighty, solo songs. I throw in a couple of covers as well.
Yeah,
right. I mean, acoustic version of Ace of Spades. If anybody wants to come down and check that out tonight,
and the stories between the songs are almost as entertaining as the songs themselves. When he just has a stage and a room to himself, he turns into somebody completely different. But if we're gonna start, I mean, we might as well start with something from Riders, right?
Black Star Riders.
Let's do Better Than Saturday Night, which is that's the new song from the upcoming record,
right? The first song,
whenever you want to do that, let's just go and do that. I'll shut up.
I'm trying to remember this time.
Really?
Yeah. Went down the Netflix rabbit hole last night when I got the hotel. It's not about blood. It's all about love. It's not about them. It's all about us. Don't even think for a minute. But don't waste your time. Nobody knows what's going on behind that crooked smile. So keep on doing all the don'ts. Keep on willing all the won'ts. Ah yeah, it's gonna be alright. Better than Saturday night. Clear out of sight. Better than Saturday night. It's not about them. It's all about now. It's not about if. It's all about what, when, where, and how. But don't let them fool you with the guilt of survival. In a world full of cliches, baby, you're a revival. So keep on doing all the don'ts. Keep on willing all the won'ts. Ah yeah, it's gonna be alright. Better than Saturday night. Clear out of sight. Better than Saturday night. I'll put on your getaway shoes and run into the light. It's alright. Better than Saturday night. The safest place to be is in the eye of the storm. You could talk the fire right out of the burn. Keep on dancing on the ledge and be true to yourself till the end. It's gonna be alright. So keep on doing all the don'ts. Gonna be alright. Better than Saturday night. Clear outside. Better than Saturday night. I put on your getaway shoes and run into the light. It's alright. Better than Saturday night. It's 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 better than Saturday night.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
I'm listening to that song and something that Kenny from Rascals said while we were in the break. And it's weird because Kenny's not a musician. He's a drummer. And what he said was when they first heard that song, they could immediately hear Black Star Riders and not Ricky Warwick. And I wonder if that's from writing with a partner. Mm-hmm. So you wrote that with Christian, who was the guitarist.
No, I wrote this one.
You wrote that by yourself.
By myself.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, then my question has absolutely no merit at all. Because
no, it's a very valid question. I'll bring it up because, you know, up until Another Steady Grace, when Christian joined the band, you know, obviously I was working with Damon. And we have a great chemistry when we
tour
together.
I watch you guys tour together.
And, you know, I would get an idea and whatever it was, I wouldn't necessarily finish it. Maybe I thought that I could, but I knew that if I took it to Damon, he would put his sparkle on it or his ideas. And I loved that. So I was like, well, hey, bro, I got this. And then when Damon left me.
It's all right. It's all right.
Yeah, Damon, who came in here and who bitched and moaned about never getting on a US tour, and we got a huge Judas Priest tour about 2 months later.
Yeah,
and then he quit the band. I said, what's going on, bro? What do you want? Dude, man, I love him to bits. I was just talking to him the other day. He's bro. Anyway, and then when Christian joined, obviously, you build up a rapport with somebody new, and we started writing together. And it, you know, it worked quite well. But I found that when we were moving forwards, and certainly for the new album, Wrong Side of Paradise, I had a real clear vision of what I wanted the album to be. Obviously, with Scott kind of stepping aside, suddenly I'm playing more guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was like, you know, this. I wrote most of the songs prior to, I wrote them early 2020, right before we went into lockdown. There's only two songs I wrote that are on the record during lockdown. And they all just came and I kind of finished them. I sent them to Christian and Christian's going, I got nothing to add to these, man. These are killer. And we went up and we demoed at Christian's place up in Oregon. We demoed at his studio up there. And I think I ended up co-writing about three or four with him on the new record. And the rest is just all me. And it was great of him to say so. He's like, these are great. You know, let's just do them. You know, I don't want to change anything.
As you grow, we're all always changing and grow, but you're growing as a writer. You're growing into the Black Star Writers sound. Yeah. It's not bigger than you. Yeah. It's now become part of you, which is pretty cool. And I'm sure Scott's eyeballs were right inside as he's looking through the window of the recording studio, begging and wishing he could come back. But that song sounds completely different acoustic than it does. It is, I mean, it's a hard charging dual guitar, you know, Black Star Riders. Thank you, man. Legit sound.
I write everything on acoustic because it's the old cliche, but it's true that if it sounds great stripped down, it's going to sound great when you turn up the Marshalls and fire everybody up. And it that works. But I mean, like I'm quite capable of writing a song and finishing it on my own without any help.
Yeah.
But I love help. I love being in that band situation where, guys, I got this idea, and then somebody comes in and goes, well, have you tried this? Have you tried that? And sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes you go, well, I like my idea better.
Yeah.
And I want to stick with that. But to have that option is brilliant, and which is why I love doing the solo stuff, because I get to be the narcissist. You know, I get to just go, it's my solo record. I can do what I want. But I love doing the band thing as well, where the guy comes and goes, yeah, you know, I've got a better bridge for that. Check this out. And I go, oh, you do? This is killer. I love that option as well, that whole team thing too, you know.
And with that style of recording and writing, how much stuff do you have that is just in files, like on recorded tracks that you haven't released, of stuff that is just still working parts?
There's a lot, man, because I write every day, so there's a lot of stuff, you know, on the go. And never throw anything away.
How does your filing system work for that? I did this thing. It was on guitar. Oh, wait, damn it.
Yeah. I see what it was. Something, the G's. I'll tell you something really sad, man. I'm a bit of a technophobe, right?
Okay.
And so, you know, it started off, it was the old, you know, tape recorder. Yeah. I just play the guitar and sing it into that. Then I got really high tech. It was the iPhone. Uh-huh. And up until the pandemic, man, I was just playing into the iPhone and recording it. And that worked fine. And then I discovered GarageBand.
Oh, yeah.
We call it GarageBand.
Now I'm this like possessed guy, and I'm buying all these mics now and all this kind of stuff. And but the problem that I'm finding is, like, by the time I set up all the mics and the whole thing, I've forgotten the friggin' idea. And so I've gone back to just using the iPhone again, you know. By the time I get the sound system, tell the kids to be quiet and get the dog to stop barking, and you know, it's like, so, you know, a good song is a good song, and no matter how you record it.
Oh, sure.
And I think that, you know, whatever, as long as you get it down and can remember the idea, and then you've something to build from there. You know,
so. That's interesting, because you could okay, then I need, and let me get the lighting, because people are going to want to see it when we do the documentary. Dude, it's gone.
I think I thrive in chaos. I mean, I write, you know, I will get up and I go, okay, I've got to drop the kids at school, and, you know, my wife wants me to pick up some groceries, and I go, well, so I've got 2 hours to write, so I'll write in that 2 hour window. I went to the desert for a week. I thought, you know, I was like, I'm taking a week out, I'm gonna go and write some songs, I've got all these distractions, I'm an artist, I need to,
oh wow,
I gotta,
okay,
go
sure,
to the desert and have some me time and write some songs. Dude, I wrote nothing.
I got a sunburn.
I came back 2 days earlier when I'm bored. I didn't write anything.
Stupid, you know, desert. You know.
Yeah. Ricky Warwick is in the studio with us. He is performing tonight, an acoustic show at Rascals. His entire career basically is going to be profiled to a certain extent.
Yeah, 35 year long set.
Yeah, right.
Perfect. No. Yeah. I mean, a sample from all over the place.
Absolutely,
all right.
No.
Could I ask you to play a Thin Lizzy song?
Yeah, man.
Can you do one?
Boomtown is over. Ghost town is all that's here. Gold rush is over. Depression days draw near. So tonight after sundown,
gonna pack my case, disappear without a frown, live without a trace. Whoa, I'm going southbound. Whoa, I'm going southbound. Drifting like a drover, chasing my career. From the ships docked in the harbor, new horizons will appear. Tumbling with the tumbleweed down the open road, I'll be taking just what I need before my head explodes. Oh, I'm going southbound. Southbound, southbound. Whoa, I'm going southbound. Whoa, I'm going southbound. You're not getting any younger, your western ways are gone. All the nights are growing colder, your eastern ways are gone. Sunday night after sundown, you must go from this place. Without a tear, without a frown, disappear without a trace. Southbound. Whoa, I'm going southbound. New horizons will appear. Oh, I'm going south from here. Without a word, without a sound, I've got to leave this ghost town. Go down past Rio, I gotta go. Oh, you know I'm southbound. Southbound.
Awesome.
Apologies, fellow. I got the verses back to front there, but it's early in the morning.
We're going
to
point it out.
Yeah. Don't change the words. So that's not a song that you wrote. It's not a.
I wish I did.
But it's a song that you absolutely own.
Thank you.
But you grew up hearing it. Yeah. I mean, you heard obviously. Yeah.
Lizzie was a religion when I was a kid for me.
I'm sure.
Still is.
And when was it the first time you sat down with the guys in that band and started like singing that song?
You know, it was really strange. I think I've said before on the show, Scott and I go way back for 30 years. I met Scott when I was in the Almighty, and we were friends. And Scott played on my first ever solo record, so there was always a connection there. And you know, he's still a legend and a hero to me, but he's my buddy. So when he called in 2010, I was very much thinking he's just calling up to say, how's it going? How are you? Which we do from time to time, which he was. And then he went, I'm putting Lizzie back together. I want you to sing. You know, phone drop, pick myself up off the floor. And I went.
Seriously, did you have a panic attack at that point? Like an anxiety flash?
I just went, excuse me? And he said it again. And I went, I'm in. Because who doesn't dream about singing for their favorite? Anybody says, oh, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. As a kid, you dream about being in your favorite band, right? It's only after I agreed to do it, I went, what the hell have I done? What are you thinking, Warwick? How are you going to pull this off? What are you doing? This is sacrilege. you know, you're setting yourself up for all kinds of stuff here. And when it sunk in, I talked to Scott about how I wanted to present the band. I said, so you want me to play bass and sing? No problem, give me some time. He said, no, I don't want you to play bass and sing because that's Philo's thing. Mm-hmm. He said, I want to put Lizzie together and play the songs with the intensity and the soul and the passion that we used to play them. But I wanted to look a bit different. He said, I just want you to sing.
So he didn't want the lead singer to be playing bass?
He didn't want it to be like a tribute. He didn't want it to be... You
that's
know,
pretty smart.
Because he's going, it's not the same. It's a new Thin Lizzy. We're going to play the old songs, but I don't want to present it in a way that's, for want of a better word, patronizing to Philo.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's great. I mean, I wanted to play bass and sing. Believe me, I did. You know, I was like.
But the comparisons to you and Phil, and would they be going? No, he's just not.
No, because right. People go, "That's that guy from the Almighty. He shouts a lot. You know, how can he sing those songs?" But then, you know, when you hear the solo records, you hear that I'm singing on it. And Joe Elliott, bless him, was instrumental in the whole thing. Because when Scott was thinking about putting the band back together, he's going, "Oh man, I've got to try and find a singer." And Scott's going, "What about Ricky playing the solo?" And Scott's going, "Up." Oh, Ricky'd be great. He's Irish, for a start. So, you know, that takes a box. And, you know, that whole thing just, you know, I had 6 months. I said to Scott, look, of course I want to do it. Am I up against anybody else? Is this an audition? He went, no, I'm not auditioning. We want you to do it. It's yours to lose. So if you come in when we get together and you suck, that's on you.
Yeah.
But you're not up against 10 other guys. He said, the gig is yours. But, you know, when we rehearse for the first time, if your chops aren't there, then obviously, you know, we're going to have to address it. I went, okay, no pressure, thanks. So, but I had 6 months to learn. I mean, I knew most of the songs, but I had 6 months to sort of get the stuff together. But prior to that, I was actually out in the UK on a solo tour, and Scott goes, hey, I see you're in London. You got a couple of days off. I'm flying Brian Downey over. I'm getting the guys together. Let's get in the studio and just see if this thing's going to work with you singing. And that was like 3 days later, and I was like, I'm on tour playing my solo stuff, and instantly I have to really learn like 6 or 7 Lizzie songs inside out. Well, we got together in London, and we went in, and Vivian Campbell was there because he was in the first incarnation as well. And I think we played Boys Are Back in Town, Jailbreak, Dancing in the Moonlight. I think we might have done Southbound. I can't remember what else. We just did them, and it was great. And it was so bizarre, and I left the room and I could tell they were talking about me. And I came back in and Scott just went, well, but welcome to Thin Lizzy, you know. And I
was, man.
And our manager, Adam Parsons, who's now my manager, was Lizzie's manager at the time and still is Lizzie's manager, but he's my personal manager now as well. He had a photographer and Classic Rock magazine on Spinoza and me waiting outside to do a photo session straight away. So like, it was like, well, if he's going to suck, you can go home. But if he's in the band, bring the camera in and the whole thing. You're in the band and suddenly he's like, you know, here's a photo session for Classic Rock magazine. And it was as crazy as that. And then I had 6 months to learn the songs.
Because like you said, you knew them, but you don't know them to sing them on tour.
No, you don't know them. And Phil, I was like, well, how do I want to present this? I want to put as much intensity and power and passion and soul into it as Phil did. I want people... I want it to be as close sounding to Phil as I possibly can, but put my own take on it as well. So it's that kind of, you're walking that line, and it's trying to find a way to do that. Like, first and foremost, I'm a Lizzie fanatic. I'm a nut. I'm a fan. Phil Lynott is a lead singer of Thin Lizzy. There's nobody else. I'm not the lead singer. Phil's a lead singer. He always will be. End story. That's the way that it is. So I'm not the lead singer of Thin Lizzy. I just get to sing his songs. And that's what I do.
That's a great way of looking at it.
And that's an honor and a privilege that I could never have dreamed of in my life.
It's a responsibility,
Phil
Phil,
people go, there's no Phil, no Lizzie. I'm like, yeah, you're right. There isn't. This is a different Thin Lizzy. But we're keeping his songs alive. And the joy that it's brought to people who never got to see Thin Lizzy because they were too young or for whatever reason didn't get to see them is huge.
Yeah.
You know, but I'll tell you, the first tour was kind of funny. You know, the first show was Aberdeen in Scotland. And people vote with their feet, and this was great as well. And the show sold out on the day. There's about 2,500 people there, and we had a huge kabuki curtain, and we would start with Are You Ready? And, of course, I'm just sweating bullets at this point. I'm going, what have I done? What have I agreed to? They're going to kill me. And we're standing waiting for the curtain to drop, and we'd start and we'd come out with, are you ready? And off we go. And Scott Gorin's standing beside me, and he's kind of looking at me, and he's grinning. I remember I just wanted to punch him so hard in the face. I just wanted to give him a right like a haymaker and go, dude, what the hell are you talking me into? My legs. And then the curtain drops, and we're off. And we're off the races. Now, the first four or five songs of that tour, everybody was like, looking at you. I'm on radio and I'm pulling the face here. It's great. Everybody look good on radio. Everybody's looking at you going, what's this guy selling? Is he going to be any good? There's an apprehension from the crowd, and rightly so. And then when they could feel it and see it and go, this is actually all right, this is good, then suddenly it became a great gig. And after the first show, obviously, is the power of the internet, the whole tour sold out the next day.
Wow.
Completely.
So that show and shows, it's just like Scott said, it's your job to lose every concert, every night. Because if they're sitting there with their arms crossed going, let's see, you got how much time to win?
You know, I'm representing Phil, and I think I told you a story when Phil's mom came to see us in Dublin. Obviously, that was the... Did I tell you that story?
No.
Have I time to tell you that story?
Sure. Let's take a break.
It's a great story.
Well, save some of the stories for tonight, because...
No, I'll tell this one. I'm not going to tell this one tonight, so I'd love to tell you.
All right, let's do
a great story.
Let's take a break, and then because we're running way behind. But
I'm sorry.
No.
It's a gift to the gab, you know what I can say.
No, we're sitting here talking, and we forget that we're at work sometimes, so that's a good thing, you know? So we'll more with Ricky Warwick when we come back. When the first time Phil Lynott's mom saw him, he's gonna share that with us when we return. Ricky Warwick is in the studio with us. He's doing an acoustic show tonight at Rascals. It's free.
It's a free show.
With a rather steep 8-drink minimum. But hey,
And then we should also mention, as part of your traversing the U.S. here, you're doing Rock Falls Saturday night. You're in Rock Falls.
Top. Yeah, it's a great spot.
Yeah. And then where else are you going, anywhere else on this particular
part? No, I've got a private show Sunday in the area, and then that's me done USA. I mean, we're definitely coming out with Black Star Riders next year with a new record.
So you're just popping in to say, hey, make sure your visa's still good.
You know, just any chance to come up and see Kenny and the gang and these places, I'm all about it, you know?
There you go. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry. I was like, I forgot I was on the mic there.
If you put headphones on.
Forget it. All right, so before when we went to break, Ricky was telling us, getting ready to tell us, the first time he's performing with Thin Lizzy and Phil Lynott's mom is in the audience. Did you know beforehand that
I
she
did.
Was? Okay, so was that worse? Or?
Yeah, you know, it's Dublin. We're playing Dublin, Ireland, Phil's hometown. It's the first time we played there with the new lineup of Lizzie, so I'm terrified enough as it is. Then word comes down that Philomena, Phil's mom, is coming to the show, and I'd never met her before. And anybody that doesn't know, Philomena was amazing at keeping the whole spirit of Phil going. That she was amazing with the fans. She would welcome them into her house in Dublin and make them feel at home, make them a cup of tea and tell them stories about Phil. She was just great about talking about her boy. You know, it's obvious she loved him so much. So anyway, I hear she's come to the show. I'm terrified. Terrified. And we go on stage. We play Dublin. It's a sold out show. And I'm very respectful, obviously, of Phil being from there. Show goes great. And at the corner of my eye, it's a beautiful old theater called the Olympia Theater in Dublin. It's very old Victorian style theater. And one of the boxes I can see. We've got Larry Mullen to my right, pressure, right, from you two. And then, then we've got Philomena, and, you know, sitting to the left in one of the boxes. I can see her at the corner of my eye, and I'm like, I can't look at her. I just got to get through the show. I can't look at her. We finish with Black Rose, and I look up, and she's on her feet, and she's clapping, and I can see she's crying.
Aww.
And she's smiling. And I thought, okay, she likes it. That's good. That's fine. We go off stage, we get cleaned up. There's a bit of an after show in the venue, and my wife's over from the States as well. So we walk into the after show. Philomena's sitting down, very glamorous woman, very amazing, real handsome looking, glamorous woman. And she's sitting there and she's holding court. And I walk in and she sees me and she starts waving me over. And I said to Tina, my wife, I said, can you just give me a couple of minutes? And I start walking towards her. My heart's, you know, she's pounding. And she goes, Ricky, she goes, my Philip would have loved every second of that. And I started bawling.
Yeah.
I started crying. I broke down.
How mom is that? My Philip.
And she said, you know, the soul, the intensity and the passion that you put into his songs, he would have loved. And he would have loved the fact that people are still hearing his music and you're playing it. And I'm on the floor at this point, you know, just a gibbering mess. Mm-hmm. And she gives me a big hug and she goes, I miss him and I think about him of every second of every day. And she said, you made me miss him even more tonight.
Aww.
And, you know, and just...
That's good and bad.
She couldn't... I mean, and I was just like, is this happening? You know, is this... And I said, you've no idea what this means to me. Philomena, thank you so much.
Wow.
And walked away and went back to Tina. And of course, tears. I mean, was everything okay? Did she tell you you sucked? Are you crying? What's going on? You know? And I told her and she starts crying. And, you know, and then I just went... That's all the validation I ever need is right there in those words she said to me, because everything's okay. I don't need to care if anybody's going, well, there's no Phil, there's no Lizzie, mm-hmm. you're tarnishing the legacy, you shouldn't be doing it. His mom thought it was amazing that, listen, what artist doesn't want their songs to be played after they're not here anymore? Well, what's the point in creating art if you want it to die with you? It doesn't make sense. And she understood that and got it, and it was just the most beautiful moment of being in Thin Lizzy that has happened to me so far.
Look at the moment you gave her. Have you thought about that?
No, I haven't. Actually, that's amazing you said that.
You know what? She didn't have to say that to you.
No.
But, wow, I'm just listening to this. You know,
she didn't even have to come to the show. I mean, I was surprised that she did, because, I mean, it must have brought back a lot of...
What you got from her, think about what she got from you, dude.
Yeah.
My Philip, I hear that, and I don't have any idea what she looks like, but I got a mom who, you know, he's rock and roller. Yeah. They're very loud. I bitched when she was here, and now he's gone. Yeah.
Well, you know, super protective. You know, you can't deny how much she loved her boy, and, you know, those words just, I walked out of there 20 feet tall, and it gave me a confidence. And, you know, because being a fan, I would have days where I'm going, should I be doing this?
Of course you do.
Is this the right thing to be doing?
Because you're an artist also. Yeah. And so creating your own lane, your own, pursuing your own vision is also part of, you know, the artist in you. But this is an opportunity that exists also.
Yeah.
And so you want to give it everything that you can.
Yeah.
By the way, Philomena was there because she thought you too was playing. She wanted to beat Larry.
Dick, way to ruin the moment. And,
that's why I was there. I heard a story about Larry. Larry Mullen, actually, Brian Downey, Lizzie's drummer, is his hero.
Oh, really?
And Larry Mullen was like a 6-year-old kid around Brian Downey, you know, just falling around everywhere. I've got a great picture with the two of them together, you know, and it was really sweet to see that, you know.
Philomena said that I reminded me of her of my Philip. Now, Larry, he said you were rushing the tempo quite a bit and you should knock it off.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what that meant, but she was crying about that also. Yeah. Dude, it's always fun chatting with you. I appreciate it. I know it's hard getting up in the morning, but I'm reading the input from listeners. We had a way of saying this. When I was a kid, I used to think the bands were in the studio playing the music, and I just couldn't fathom it being any other way. And now we're kind of doing that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's fun for hopefully for everybody, for you, for the listeners, for me and Dwyer, because, you know, we don't have to come up with any content. We can just sit back and rest.
So when you're playing these shows, the one tonight at Rascals, you don't have a set list, right? You just kind of go in and you sort of just feel
it out.
Yeah, I
have a pool of about 30 songs that I get together, and then, you know, I'll end up doing most of them. I think I did about 23 last night at the show I did last night, and I'm just picking whatever I'm feeling.
Because when you went into Southbound, you know, we were just talking about playing a Thin Lizzy song, and I don't know if you guys had discussed it or not, but I mean, you just go into it, and all of a sudden, it just brings back these memories, and you just have the ability to do that. Can you just jump into any? I mean, could you do any Thin Lizzy?
No, I mean, there's certain songs that you know, you need the dual guitars, harmonies that works really well. There's certain ones that work stripped down acoustically well.
Oh.
You know,
like that was one of them. Yeah,
Dancing
for sure.
Like Jailbreak will work really well. Boys even works great acoustically. You know, Bad Reputation might not be so great acoustically, but you know, because it's such a heavy song. So you just you work out what ones are going to sound good and work, you know.
I'll handle this. He'll see if he can get that on for you, sir. Thank you for your question.
I think it's so cool because you're just kind of up there and it's just such an organic thing.
Yeah. I was nervous about even asking, hey, could you play it? And then I thought, you know what? Man, you played Whiskey in the Jar for us the last time, that's and I felt like an idiot asking that. He's like, you know, we never play that on the radio, but I'm going to try. How's my accent?
It's English. A little bit English.
Jory's out in that one.
Yeah, right. For sure. For sure. I hear that a lot.
Yeah, but 7 miles out in that one.
I was kind of hoping one day I'd
don't
hear,
ever go to Ireland.
I hear Running Back, which is another one of my Lizzie songs. Yeah. But I think I would have to hear it where it like faded out in the middle, changed tracks, and then went to the next song. Because I only heard it on the Jailbreak 8-track when I was growing up. Yeah. That's how I heard it. I'm probably a little older than you. Yeah. So it was, but that's, so I think to have the power to be able to go right into anything, you just bring that crowd right with you. It's thank absolutely you. A show worth thank seeing, you. Even if you had to pay for it. So I don't know what you're doing, but especially on the Saturday show at Cardwell's in Rock Falls, that's definitely worth seeing. You should pack that place because that's going to be a great show. Tonight's going to be a great show. I wish I could see it. I'm going to be drinking in Chicago, unfortunately. But
before, listen, that's a good excuse.
Before we let you go, I'll just read some of these. Fan effing tastic. Oh my God, I can't believe I'm listening to this. Knock it off. I'm here at work trying to focus, but I can't because I'm crying my eyes out. That's after the Phil's mum. That's how they spelled it, Phil's mum. So they
mum. Me mum.
Always good to have you in studio, man. Guys, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for everything you do, for music and not just for me and my bands, but everybody and everybody out there who's buying the music and coming to the shows. We love you. We can't do it without you.
All right. When anytime that you're out and around in the area, please come back.
Absolutely.
All right, brother. Catch Ricky tonight, Ricky Warwick at Rascals. It's a free show, unplugged, acoustic. Give your socials so that people can keep in touch with you.
Yeah, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff, rickywarwick.com. Just type in Ricky Warwick, it'll come up, and all that good stuff's on there.
All right, man. Good seeing you. Thank you again.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back.